All right, turn with me to 2 Samuel, and we'll be in chapter 11. We're on week 34 in our journey, and our memory verse for this week comes from chapter 12, which I'm planning on us talking about tonight. So we're going to start chapter 11, so I've got big plans. But our memory verse is chapter 12, verse 13. And it's after Nathan has confronted David, and it says simply this: "And then David said to Nathan, 'I have sinned against the Lord.' And Nathan replied, 'The Lord has taken away your sin. You are not going to die.'" And what a great promise for us to remember. You know, the consequence of sin is death. But through a life-changing relationship with Jesus Christ, we will not die, but have life through Jesus. And so even this Old Testament passage reminds us of that, even after David had really, really messed up. I mean, adultery and murder, you know, I know no sin is any different in the eyes of God. It all separates us from Him and messes up our relationship with Him. But, you know, even us would say, "Wow, look at what he's done." But yet still, he could find forgiveness from God. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about tonight. We're not going to start with the sin itself, which is there in chapter 11. We're going to talk about that Sunday morning. And so I'm going to save that for then. If you want to advertise, preachers preaching on David and Bathsheba Sunday morning, get a few more folks to come. You can do that. We'll be looking at the first part of that chapter. And we're actually going to look at the whole chapter Sunday morning. But I wanted us tonight to kind of begin at the end or the last half of this with David's cover-up. So you all know the story. It's the time when kings go off to war, but David didn't go. And we'll talk about this Sunday. He was idle and, you know, wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. And that's when we get in most trouble, is when we don't do what we're supposed to be doing. If we stay busy doing what God's told us to do. I heard a preacher say one time, if you're busy doing the things God told you to do, you don't have time to do the things he told you not to do. We see David not doing what he's supposed to do. He sees Bathsheba. He even hears the Holy Spirit convict him. He even hears somebody say, "That's Uriah's wife." He still takes her. He sins, commits adultery, then finds out she's pregnant. So he tries to cover it up. And so that's where we are in verse 6. So let's pick up and kind of walk through the cover up real quickly so that we can look at chapter 12, because that's when he's confronted and convicted of his sin, and that's what I want us to think about tonight. So verse 6 of chapter 11. "So David sent his word to Joab, 'Send me Uriah the Hittite.' And Joab sent to him David. And when Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, and how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. And then David said to Uriah, 'Go down to your house and wash your feet.' And so Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance of the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. And when David was told Uriah did not go home, he asked, 'Haven't you just come from a distance? Why didn't you go home?' And Uriah said to David, 'The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my master Joab and my lord's men are camped in open fields. How could I go to my house to eat and drink and lie with my wife? Surely as you live, I will not do such a thing.' And then David said to him, 'Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I'll send you back.' So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next, and at David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servant and did not go home." So again, David has been with Bathsheba. He finds out that she's pregnant. So he begins to plot to get help make Uriah think that this is his child, so his sin isn't exposed. He calls Uriah back from the battlefield. So David didn't go to the battlefield where he was supposed to be, and then instead calls Uriah back from the battlefield. And Uriah is, obviously you see the more righteousness of Uriah, that he doesn't even go, won't go home because of all of his brothers who are out in the field. And they're not having an opportunity to do that, so he refuses to go home. And so David said, well, that didn't work. So the next night he gets him drunk, thinking once he gets drunk, he'll go home to see his wife. But Uriah remained true to his commitment and stayed and slept on his mat outside of with David's servants and didn't go back to his home. So now David's plot and plan to try to get Uriah to go back to Bathsheba to cover up his sin didn't work. And then so twice Uriah refuses to go back to his wife. So failing to deceive Uriah, David arranges then for Uriah to be killed. So let's pick up there with the next verse. So in the morning, David, verse 14, in the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it he wrote, put Uriah in the front line where the fighting is fiercest, and then withdraw from him so that he'll be struck down and die. And so while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. And when the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell moreover. Uriah the Hittite died. And Joab sent David a full account of the battle. And he instructed the messenger, when you'd finished giving the king the account of this battle, the king's anger may flare up, and he may ask you, why did you get so close to the city to fight? Didn't you know they would shoot arrows from the wall? Who killed Abimelech, son of Jephru, Bethshah? Didn't a woman throw a milestone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebes? Why did you get so close to the wall? And if he asks you this, then you tell him, also your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead. And the messenger sent out, and when he arrived, he told David everything Joab had said to him. And the messenger said to David, the men overpowered us and came out against us in the open, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate, and then the archers shot arrows at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead. And so, again, David had sent the sealed letter to Joab, giving him instructions about what he was to do to bring about Uriah's death. Joab does that, places him in the fiercest part of the battle. He's killed just like David had planned. And then Uriah kind of discreetly sends that message back to David that Uriah had been killed. And so we see that message delivered, and David continues in his cover-up. And then verse 22, the messenger set out, and when he arrived, he told David everything Joab had sent him to say. And the messenger said to David, the men overpowered us and came out against us in the open, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate. Then the arrows shot down arrows at your servants from the wall. Some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite died. And David told the messenger, say this to Joab, don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy it. Say this to encourage Joab. And when Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. And after the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife, and she bore him a son. But the thing David had done displeased the Lord. So now we've seen the whole process. And we're going to talk about this Sunday. We're going to talk about sin. We're talking about how we try to cover it up. We do something and we spend so much effort and so much time trying to make sure nobody finds out our dirty secrets. And how, in the midst of that, how that it can destroy us, it can destroy other people, it can cause problems for the country. And so that's what we're going to see as this confronts. But what I wanted us just to, the folks just kind of set the tone of what has happened in your mind about how David had sinned and how he had worked so hard to cover it up, and even the lengths that he went to cover it up. And so now he has displeased God by his sin and his covering up of that sin. And then we see him, he's married Bathsheba, she's had the baby, and it looks and appears like he's going to get away with it. That takes us to chapter 12. All right, everybody ready to go? Chapter 12. And this is, as a preacher, this is one of my favorite passages. So, chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord sent Nathan to David. And when he came to him, he said, "There were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except for one little ewe lamb he had bought, and he raised it, and it grew up with him and his children, and it shared his food, and it drank from his cup, and it even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man, and he prepared it for the one who had come to him. And David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, 'As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this deserves to die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity.' And then Nathan said to David, 'You are the man.'" This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Now, I don't know about you, but that's good preaching. He told the story. He got his attention. And I mean, you can see David. I mean, what a story! You know that that was so fit perfectly. David's the king. He's already got wives. We're not gonna, you know, if you want to talk about multiple wives, Neil will be glad to talk about that too. The service. And we've talked about the problems that occurs. But David had, he had it all. And yet, Uriah, this faithful man, he takes his wife, gets her pregnant, then has him killed, then marries her, and thinks he's gotten away with it. And it's that same picture. And it's interesting that David, in his anger, says, "That man should die." And then Nathan just looks at him and says, "You're that man. You're that man." And how true is that of us, that when we sin and we get so angry at somebody else's sin, and the truth is we're just as guilty as they are. The truth is we've rebelled against God. The truth is, even as believers, sometimes we know better that they may not, because we have that relationship with God. Remember, God chastens those whom he loves. You know, we've talked before about the fact that you know, when my children were growing up, that if they did something, and there's a group of children playing, and, you know, when Jay would be playing with some of the other boys at the church, and they got into doing something they shouldn't be doing, whose name am I going to call out and say stop? It's going to be Jay. Why? Because he belongs to me. And yet we think that you know, God ought to just be jumping all over the people we see around our city who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, or the people in Hollywood who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, or the people in Washington who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it's real easy to point our finger at them and say they're the problem. But then the Holy Spirit probably looks at us and says, "You're that man. You're the one who's done it. What have you done? Look at the sin in your life." And so that's where David is. He sends Nathan to confront him. And David, rightfully so, is furious about the story that he hears, only to have it thrown back in his face that he is that man. Now, the important thing here, he's been confronted in his sin, and here's the difference. And I want us to look at this, because over and over again, Saul was confronted in his sin. Samuel confronted Saul about doing things he wasn't supposed to be doing, about not waiting for him like he had been told to wait for him, about offering the sacrifice that he wasn't allowed to offer, about doing other things that he wasn't supposed to do. And every time, what did Saul do? He just made excuses and he blamed somebody else. And he never took responsibility for his actions. But David, when confronted with the sin, I want you to, and what the lesson for us really is to watch what he does. So look with me then back at verse 7. Then Nathan said to David, "You are this man. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you and your master's wives into your arms. I gave you the house of Israel and Judah, and if all of this had been too little, I would have given you even more. Why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing this evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Amorites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house, because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own." This is what the Lord says. "Out of your own household I'm going to bring calamity upon you. Before your very eyes I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you, and he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. You did it in secret, but I will do this thing in broad daylight before all of Israel." So look at the consequences of his actions. David had done this in secret. And again, you think again about his words. What has God done for us? You know, he had made David king. He had protected him from Saul. He had given him the kingdom. He had given him all sorts of blessings and things. And yet David still desired something that wasn't his, and went lusting after that, and took that, and didn't do what was right. What has God done for us? I mean, he took us from our sin, from bondage to sin. He sent his son to die for us and pay the price of our forgiveness. He cleansed us and made us free from sin so that we could live a life and a relationship with him. That's what he intended for us to do. But yet, in spite of everything he did and the great cost it cost him to purchase our forgiveness, what did we do? We see something we want, we take it. We see something we know we shouldn't do, and we do it. Just like David. And then we spend all of our energy trying to cover it up so nobody knows. And so we see that. And then look at the punishment that's going to come. You know, what you did in secret, somebody's going to do in public. It's going to be there for everybody to see. And we know, and if as you read the rest of these chapters this week, we begin to look at Amon raping Tamar and Absalom killing Amon. You know, one son rapes his daughter, and then another son kills the first son, and then he rebels against him. And all of the things that we see over and over again, the consequences of that. And here's part of that truth. David was the leader. David was the example. When David said, "As king, the rules don't apply to me," what did his children say? They said, "These rules don't apply to me either. I'm going to do whatever I want to do." And the truth is, that's part of the problem our world has, is they see too many of us saying the rules don't apply to us. We're God's people. We can do what we want to do. He's going to forgive me. And yet the catastrophe and the consequences of our action And we wonder why, again, Henry Blackaby used to say that the problem is not that the world is dark. Dark is, the world's supposed to be dark. The problem is the church is dark too. And we're supposed to be the light that brings light to the darkness. And instead, we look just like the world, and sometimes even worse than the world. And so that was where David found himself. And so he gets confronted in his sin, and he has to face the consequences. And so again, God's going to forgive David. You already know that. We haven't got to it yet, but that's what's going to happen. But there were still consequences to his actions. And when we sin as God's people, God's already paid for every sin we've ever done and every sin we ever will do. His son's death on the cross paid all of that. But it doesn't mean there aren't consequences to our actions. It doesn't mean it doesn't break relationships with other people. It doesn't mean it doesn't ruin our witness before the world. And so that's what David then had to face. And he had to face it in his own family, with his own children doing some of the things, again, based on seeing what he had done, taking what they wanted instead of being obedient and following the rules of God. And the consequences then that led, killing somebody in revenge because it was because of their anger, just like killing somebody to cover up their sin. And so you saw that happen. And that rebellion that is going to happen in his own family. And in part, as the prophecy here says, it's because of David's sin. That's the consequence of David's sin. And so we've got to understand, again, that a lot of the trouble we bring on ourselves by our own behavior. And that's why it's so important that we resist sin. That's why it's so important that we learn to live a holy life as God is holy. As Jesus tells us, and the consequences when we don't. Now, his family is going to be in turmoil. Look at verse 13. Verse 13. David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan replied, "The Lord has taken away your sin. You are not going to die. But because by doing this you have made the enemies of the Lord show utter contempt, the son born to you will die." So David confesses his sin, and Nathan tells him that the Lord has forgiven him. And so we see that, again, the consequence, and part of the consequences is his child's going to die. And so we're going to see that. But David repents of the sin. And we'll get back to the child in a minute. But turn with me in your Bibles over to Psalm 51, because this is one of my favorite psalms. And this is what one of the two or three psalms that David wrote after this account.
What was the psalm?
Psalm 51, 5:1. Uh-huh. And again, this is Psalm 51. The subtitle says, "For the director of music, a psalm of David, when the prophet Nathan came to him after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba." And so listen to David's words. You know, simply here, all it says is, Nathan says, "God will forgive you." Listen to David's words. "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love. According to your great compassion, blot out my transgression, wash away my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin." And so you see David crying out to God to forgive him and to cleanse him. Now, a couple of things, and I mean, the whole psalm, and I encourage you to go back and read all of it. I encourage you to read Psalm 32, 32, which is another one that talks about this after those events. But listen to what he says. He says, "Blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, cleanse me from my sin." So David sought forgiveness, and that forgiveness begins by admitting his sin. Matter of fact, in Psalm 32, he says, "My sin is ever before me. Wherever I look, I see the sin that I've done. I've seen what I've done." I mean, when I go to bed, that's all I'm thinking about. When I get up, that's all I'm thinking about. Everywhere I look, I see and know what I've done, how I've blown it. And here he uses three different words for sin. He says, blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, cleanse me from my sin. That first word is transgression. In Hebrew, that's the word pshah. And pshah means rebellion against God. It is high-handed rebellion. In other words, it's not something that you, a mistake you made. You sin because you just messed up. It is knowing what you're doing is wrong and shaking your fist in God's face and say, "I know it's wrong, but I'm going to do it anyhow." You ever had a defiant child who you told not to do something and they just sit there? And I won't talk about her because y'all all know her now, but I'll talk about Jay. Jay was much more defiant. He would just look at you and you can punch me if you want to, but it's just determined. And that's the kind of rebellion that transgression means. That God has told us not to do something and we've said nope. Shaking our fist in our Father's face and saying, "I'm going to do what I want to do. It doesn't matter what you say. I'm going to do what I want to do." And that's exactly what David did. We didn't read it, but in those first six verses, when David sees her and somebody says, "Isn't that Uriah's wife?" And David says, "I know this is wrong. She's married. I know this is wrong. The Spirit's convicted him." But what does he say? I'm king. I'm going to do it anyways. This is what I want. And that's how we sin. We rebel against God. We have rebelled against God. The second thing he says, blot out my transgressions and wash away my iniquity. Now the word iniquity in Hebrew is the word for avon. And avon means perversion. It's taking something good and twisting it into something that's wrong. For example, I'll use one in my own life. Food. Can we agree that food is good? But what about when you eat too much of it? What does it become? It becomes sin. Intimacy between a man and woman in the context of marriage is good. But whenever you take it out of that context, you twist it and make it into something that's wrong. That's what avon means. It's what iniquity is. It's taking something that God intended for good and twisting it into something that's wrong. So he rebelled against God. He took a good gift from God and twisted it into something that was wrong. And then the third thing he says there is cleanse me from my sin. And the word sin in Hebrew is the word kata. And it's close to what the word for sin in the New Testament means. It means to miss the mark. It means not to hit what God intended for us to be. You know, it's Romans 3:23. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We've come up short. We haven't hit the target that God wanted us to hit. And so that's the word. Now, you know in Hebrew that numbers mean things, right? To the Israelites. What does the number 3 mean? It means completion. And so what David is saying is what? I have transgressed, I have committed iniquity, I have sinned. I have completely messed up. And see again the difference between him and Saul, who would make excuses and blame it on somebody else's. David says, "I've done it, I've messed it up. I've done it, I've completely messed up, I've completely sinned." But look at those phrases again, because what does it say? Doesn't just say, "I committed transgression, I committed iniquity, I committed sin." It says, "Blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin." So there are three words for sin, but there are also three words for God's forgiveness and how he dealt with David's sin. What did he do? He blotted out his transgressions. To blot out literally means to scrape off. And you've heard us talk about this before, that often when you borrowed money in those days, when you borrowed somebody, you went to the bank to borrow some money. Their walls were made out of adobe brick mud. They would take a knife and they would carve it into the wall. Now, how'd you like to go into the bank and everybody that comes to that bank sees how much money you owe them carved into the wall? Your debt. That's what they did. And when you paid that debt, what did they do? They would take a knife and scrape off that top layer so that what? So that it was gone. That's how they erased it. They'd cut it off with a knife, cut off that layer. That's what that means. My debt for my rebellion, God scrapes off so that nobody else can see it. The second thing he says, wash away my iniquity. Now, this isn't the word for washing your face or your hands. This is the word for washing clothes in the stream. Now, they didn't have Maytags or whatever kind of washing machine you've got in your house. How did they wash? They didn't even have scrub boards.
Rocks.
They used the rocks in the stream, and they would literally beat the clothes on the rocks. They would take them and they would rub them between the rocks. They would beat them. They would scrape them. Whatever it took to get the dirt out of their clothes on the rocks. So what does David say? He said, God, you beat me on the rocks if that's what it takes to get me clean. You get away with my iniquity, my perversion. And then he says, "The cleanse me from my sin." And the word cleanse there literally means to be declared clean. Do you remember when the lepers were healed? Do you remember what they were told to do? To go to the temple and let the priest say you're clean? That's what that is. Declared clean. So God, again, so there are three words for sin. Why? Because David's sin was complete. There are three words for forgiveness. Why? Because David's forgiveness was complete. It was washed away. It was scraped away. It was declared clean. And one last thing from there, and it wasn't because of David. It wasn't because of who he was. He did the right thing. He confessed. He repented. He asked God. This is his prayer, asking God to forgive him. And that's what God did. But why was he forgiven? Not because of David. Look at why he was forgiven. Look at how it starts. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Why was he forgiven? Because of the character of God. God's mercy, God's unfailing love, God's great compassion. Mercy, that word we know, is getting what we don't deserve. Not that David deserved to be forgiven, but God is merciful and so he forgave him. Not only that, then that unfailing love, that's the word chesed, that we talk about that word for God's love for us. In a relationship and how he loves us, even though we don't deserve it. And then that word, great compassion in Hebrew, that's the word rakam. And rakam is a mother's compassion. Okay? Now, I don't know about you. I love my mom. I love my dad. They disciplined me as I deserved to be disciplined. But if I did something wrong, I was going to admit it to my mother before my daddy got home. Because my mother was going to punish me. But she had a little more compassion than my daddy did. And I was going to wait till my mother got home. I wasn't going to tell my grandmother because she didn't have any compassion at all. But you know how that is. Those mothers have a little more compassion. And God has that kind of compassion for us. even though we don't. So he was forgiven, not because of David's righteousness, not because he deserved it, because of God's mercy, God's love, and God's compassion. Now, we didn't get in, but there were still consequences. David's son passes away on the seventh day. Don't have time to really read that. That's important because it was on the eighth day that he would have been circumcised. And that's usually when he was named. So he's never given a name. But they usually, a boy would be circumcised and named on his eighth day, and he passed away on the seventh day. There is something that's there that I think. Let's read that too, because this is too important. I know we're past time.
We're good.
This is important. A conversation I have with people from time to time. Look at what he said. And after Nathan had gone home, the Lord struck the child, and Uriah's wife had gone to David, and he became ill. And David pleaded with God for the child. He fasted. He went to the house. He spent his nights lying on the ground. The elders of the household stood beside him to get him up from the ground, but he refused, and he would not eat and any food with them. And on the seventh day, the child died. David's servants were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they thought, while the child was still living, we spoke to David, but he would not listen to us. How can we tell him the child is dead? He may do something desperate. And David noticed his servants were whispering among themselves, and they realized that the child was dead. And he said, "Is the child dead?" he asked, and they replied, "He is dead." And then David got up from the ground, and after he had washed, put on lotions and changed his clothes, he went into the house of the Lord and worshiped. And then he went to his own house, and at his request they served him food and he ate. And his servants asked him, "Why are you acting this way? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept. But now that the child is dead, you get up and eat." And he answered, "While the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. And I thought, who knows, the Lord may be gracious to me and let the child live. But now that he is dead, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me." And so, and then David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and he went to her and laid with her, and she gave birth to a son, and they named him Solomon. Which, by the way, what does Solomon mean? Anybody know? Solomon comes from the Hebrew word shalom, which means what? Peace. So after all of this, David finds peace. But again, the consequences of his actions, consequences of sin, the judgment of God. But David still understood that even while he didn't get to have this child but for 7 days, that he couldn't keep him, but that one day he would be with him again. And that is a verse that I use and taught with people when they lost a child, that promise. And I believe that all children, that they will be there with us in heaven because of God's love. And we can't bring them back, but we can go to be with them through a life-changing relationship with Jesus. And David shows us that. And we show how he found peace in the forgiveness that he experienced because of God's great compassion for him.